Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks, and welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's Friday Morning GM with co-host Voss Larikos. Voss, how you doing?
Doing very well, Ken. Really enjoying your draft preview series that you put out this last week with Michael and James. Excellent content there.
I really appreciate that comment. It's a labor of love. It's probably the busiest time of the year for me, but the guys that I've had on have been outstanding in terms of the amount of depth they've gone into. And I really appreciate that. I always appreciate talking to Michael Crawford and James Ogden. And there's some really good ones coming up too. Jason Smith on the inside linebackers was a great discussion and a lot of fun. Anyway, we're going to have our own discussions about draft needs and whatnot in a special episode of Friday Morning GM before the draft. So we'll be looking at some of that. But today we're going to talk about the Liar's Luncheon to start off with, because it's one of the interesting things. One of the things that's actually true about it, and it's not a lie, is it's actually a luncheon. They serve a meal to the press over at the castle, and then they tell a bunch of lies about what's going to happen in their pre-draft press conference. I think they're trying to change the name of that to pre-draft press conference from Liar's Luncheon, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it's going to stick. It's been around for a long time under that name at this point. DaCosta, as usual, as expected, very, very cautious with the information he was willing to divulge. Pretty much they could take any position or any round, and we'll see what happens. You know, really didn't get very much on that front at all.
Yeah, a little bit of some comments at a depth. He did slip up once that we'll get into a little bit later. But let's go ahead and talk through some points. And I think the way we agreed to do this was we'll just take a point each until we're exhausted here. I have a few things, and I tend to pick anything that was coach speak. My code on my sheet here is to just leave it as an unhighlighted text. But there are a few things I thought were highlighted text that were maybe a significant or a little bit of a giveaway or new information and interesting at the least. But let's kind of talk through some of what you picked up from that, and we'll kind of alternate ideas here.
Sure, absolutely. I think one of the big takeaways that came that DaCosta mentioned was that there are less juniors in this draft class and therefore less draftable players. He attributed that to the NIL, compensation at the collegiate level. And also, I think they're finally run out of COVID years. So many of the players that had extra eligibility that loaded up previous classes are not available this year, seem to indicate that he may be willing to package late picks to either get draft capital in the 25 class or potentially maybe move up, because he's not necessarily in love with the 6th, 7th round players in this year.
Yeah, definitely picked up on that. I don't even know what the rules are anymore for how long you can stay in college with the number of people who've been in for 6 years, and going through and looking at this. But I will say this, in when I'm looking through and I'm deciding who's like a top player at a position, age is a very, very significant projection factor. And there's often at some positions as much as 3 years of age difference from the top to the bottom. And you got to be really careful about that. You don't want to be drafting guys who are 24 and a half years old when you can draft a guy who's 21 and a half at that same position. In some cases, there's guys who have still not turned 21. Were eligible for this draft. They will before the season, but they haven't yet turned 21. So I thought that was very interesting. That was definitely one of the good points. He talked about the very deep pool of players at tackle, guard, and center. I think that's 2/3 true. I think there is a very deep class of tackles, and if you want a franchise center, this is your year. Go out and get them, and you can probably get them pretty cheap. But if you want a guard, much more trouble. And a lot of pear-shaped – there are not as many pear-shaped guards as there have been in past years, guys who really have that thick glutes, big rear ends, sand in the pants kind of look you typically want out of a guard to get good leverage and good run push on the inside, good pullers. There are a few. Don't get me wrong. I just don't think there's many. I hope Eric has some picked out in later rounds, but I think when you look at what happened in free agency and all the money thrown at guards, it's an indication of just how weak the class is. And he made that comment with regard to one other position as well, running back.
Yes, yes, he did. Well, first on the topic of the guards, I think it depends on who you're projecting the transition inside. There's a few players, Jordan Morgan in particular, who I view as a guard that many view as a tackle. So that certainly plays into it. Just on a quick side note, I don't want to spend too much time, but The Athletic put out an article, I want to say about 2 weeks ago, about how, you know, the strength and the power of a player comes from the rear end, pretty much. And they had quotes from multitude, Nick Saban, Bill Belichick, and it really is an important factor of evaluating and projecting. Running backs, I thought, as we transition there, he did say, Eric DaCosta, there's a strong chance they will draft a running back, which begs the question, does that mean that they're intending to carry four running backs on the 53 once Keaton Mitchell returns from a sort of efficiency and standpoint and maximizing space? I think you can make a case they may be better off retaining a veteran that can then be released when Mitchell is ready to come back and saving that roster spot for another position.
Okay, so I guess I would think a little differently about this. So they expanded the roster by two spots where you get freebie IRs that could be IR DTRs this year. So it's not a good thing for the Ravens because they were very adept at handling that anyway, and now other teams get to do it kind of for free. It's kind of like putting – everybody else gets to ride with safety wheels when the Ravens knew exactly how to ride the bike appropriately here. But anyway, the Mitchell is, to my way of thinking, is probably going to start the year – in one of those two spots or otherwise on IR with other handshake deals that are made. So either way, he's starting the year on IR. And I don't ever worry about having too much depth at a position. I worry about having too little because injuries almost always solve those problems for you, particularly at running back. I mean, think about all the injuries you have at that position. If they're put in the unfortunate position of having four running backs that they'd really like to have them all active, I say, great, let's go to war with those guys. And, let's play the activation game as long as we can. And then figure it out at that point. But I'm not concerned about having too much depth. I'm definitely concerned about having too little in particular.
Sure. Fair points all around. Do you want to move on to your next?
Let me see if I have another one here. Would not comment on the year five option. I think he's kind of getting sick of that question. He said, we're a month away from that decision. We'll have more to say after the draft. And obviously, I think probably the decision is not relative to Elway because I don't think there's a drafter that pass rusher they would pick up that would make them want to dump Elway. But I think it's really on Bateman. If they were to take a first-round wide receiver, I think there is still a chance that Bateman would not get the fifth-year option picked up.
Yes, I read the tea leaves the same exact way there. I think there's a chance they still don't pick up Bateman's option, even if they don't land a receiver early, because that's still a lot of money for a wide receiver two, wide receiver three at this point. Certainly agree there. I don't recall the first point you made, but
Had to do with Owe.
Yes. So, yeah, just quick mention that DaCosta pointed to their success finding mid-round outside linebackers. And I think between Za'Darius Smith and Matthew Judon, that is, they've done some of their very best work acquiring talent at the premium positions late. If you compare to what they've been able to do at cornerback or wide receiver or offensive tackle, they've had most success between those four positions at outside backer in the mid-rounds.
Yeah, offensive tackle. I mean, they have had a couple of guys late who didn't necessarily
–
Ricky Wagner is the big one. Yeah. But they had other guys they drafted, like Ryan Jensen, who was drafted originally as a tackle. I mean, that's a listed position and became obviously a great center. I thought the most interesting thing he said along that line, at least to me, was that Chuck Smith is playing a big role in the evaluation side. And that is really nice. I did not think of that as something he would provide to the organization, but of course. Mm-hmm. That's very nice to hear that being fully taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm. For sure. They heard somewhere it's sort of once the calendar turns to, I guess, March is when the coaches are allowed to start weighing in for most teams. And this isn't a hard and fast rule that applies to the Ravens, a specific deadline. But most teams, the scouts sort of run the board and run the process until a certain point in the offseason. And then the coaches weigh in and collaborate. And that's how the final board is built. On that note, I thought it was interesting when asking about the departure of Joe Ortiz that the first person he mentioned to help fill that talent evaluator void was John Harbaugh, the head coach. Then he went on to mention Ozzie, George Kokinos, and a few other longtime personnel men. But I think that is an indication that Harbaugh does have a good bit of sway on the draft process. And it's good to have a sounding board. And he sort of intimated that Harbaugh will sort of be Ortiz's, fill that role of the primary sounding board along with Ozzie.
The new name I did not know was David Blackburn on that list. That's the first time I've heard his name mentioned. And it is interesting to hear that. I've heard, you know, George Kokinos has been around for a long time. And I believe he left the organization. Didn't he go to the Browns for a while and was maybe good at, or maybe the Chiefs even? It was at some point he had a higher role in another organization and he came back to the Ravens, I believe, if it's the same guy.
Maybe with Phil Savage, probably, if I recall.
Mm-hmm. Could be. So that was an interesting one. And I know he's, you know, being a player development, player operations guy, he's going to be a guy who would probably be very central to the UDFA process after that's done. That is my understanding, is that he does a lot of that communication and whatnot. So anyway, I'm glad to hear that. I heard some very funny things about his time with the Browns, or his time outside the Ravens organization, let's just say. But I want to put them together before we get into that on here.
Okay, sure.
I thought there was an interesting comment I thought he made about the challenge of picking at number 30 that really kind of underscores the way the Ravens look at the draft. And I've tried to emulate that in how I assign a value round to players. I'm not interested in where I can get it, where I have to bid in order to get a player. This isn't an auction for the players. Mm-hmm. You should look at this as a kind of a reverse auction. Is when does this player fall into your price range such that you get value? Every pick you go should have value. And DaCosta said exactly that. You know, he didn't say it exactly, but he said 15 to 20 players they might want when they're drafting number 30. And he mentioned getting value at a particular player. You hope one of those guys drops to you at 30. And it does, fantastic. And I think that's the right way to look at it. I you know, the people who tell me that you'll never get them if you wait that long, you're inherently bringing an element of need into that I immediately kind of am turned off by. Mm-hmm.
No, that's definitely a good way to look at it. Obviously, I'm not a professional football general manager, but when I play fantasy football and I have pick number 10, I write out, these are the eight guys I'd be happy at pick number 10. And then I have pick number, 28. And I say, these are the six guys I'm targeting at this pick. I think that's a good way to do it. You obviously, sometimes you have to pivot, your board gets wiped out and you have to go down to a lower tier, but I think that's a good way to do it. Yeah. I guess I'm up next. Let's go to the Bashadi Reign of Terror, which was probably the highlight of the entire press conference. Eric DaCosta mentioned that Steve Bashadi has an idea that if you trade a pick in the upcoming draft or during the draft for a next year's pick, you usually get a one round premium for, you know, future value. So if you start with a seventh round pick and you trade that seventh round pick in 23 for a sixth round pick, and then that sixth round pick for a fifth round pick in 25, all the way up the board, you can have an extra first round pick in about 7 years. So I thought that was a pretty interesting idea, kind of a nice little glimpse into the mindset of Steve. And maybe, you know, I don't think you're ever going to get that, but it is, you know, some type of strategy that you can employ to some extent, maybe not that much.
They certainly have done that. The times they've done that has been fairly rare. That's one of the points he made. They've gotten some great value, but the big one being the Jamal Lewis pick, which was number five overall, was obtained from Atlanta in the 1999 draft. The Ravens traded their second round pick, I think it was number 34 or thereabouts, and they traded it to Atlanta. And they're like, oh, this is a terrible trade. Ravens fans are going nuts because it was such a bad trade because Atlanta had just been to the Super Bowl. Well, guess what? Atlanta was one of the worst teams in the NFL the next year. And they and that pick ended up being number five and ended up turning into Jamal Lewis, which was an exciting pick. Even if you're out there and you don't really believe in running back picks at number five, if you're going to pick a running back, that's a pretty good pick.
Back then, it was a different ballgame. That was the first jersey I ever bought, believe it or not. I talk about running backs now, but first jersey I ever bought, number 31.
I don't know how many jerseys you have, Voss, but I always see four in the background here whenever you do the show. And we're just doing the audio, of course, but is Bo Ware, Reed, Ray Lewis, and I'm not sure.
Suggs.
Okay.
And then I have Nada over here on the other side.
Okay, yeah. Very good.
There's my little personal ring of honor.
Your personal ring of honor. Very good. How many total jerseys do you have?
Total?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Probably 30 or so.
Okay. That's impressive. Okay. I've probably got about 8, but I know a young lady who is a Steelers fan. She's not really a young lady. She's my age. She won't appreciate me saying that, but she's a Steelers fan. So she gets this. She ordered 10 jerseys at once, and she always goes for the cheapest Chinese jerseys, and they often come with – often. They have come before with misspellings. So they sometimes get that.
The purple color from the Chinese, it looks like blue. It doesn't look too good.
That's some weird stuff. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. I got one thing where he – gave away some information, and we know because it's kind of happened since then. And that's a question was asked about, did the kickoff return rules and the change to that mean they wanted to evaluate talent differently? And he said, great advantage to have special teams coaches, blah, 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 blah. In the end, you need to catch the ball, break tackles, and make guys miss. And he appeared to almost give away the fact that they were in the process of signing Deontay Hall Hardy. Mm-hmm. By saying that they'd be in good shape on, and you expected draft day to come after that, but then he said in September. In September. You know? And so clearly something was happening there going through his mind, and he caught himself and he did it, but then you realize kind of what he was. So maybe look for that language the next time he lays it out there if there's a transaction of a pre-draft.
Yeah. Knowing what we know now, there was a question in the early portion by Zarebek, and he asked if he's expecting any moves soon. And he said, well, Van Noy was the last big item on my list, but he kind of, you know, that we're starting to get a little bit of the idea of the cadence when DaCosta is kind of being a little bit coy. So anyway, that raised my eyebrow as well. I thought this was interesting when asked if they would consider taking a wide receiver in the first round again after 3 of the last 5 years. And that number is a little bit slanted because obviously Hollywood didn't finish his rookie term out. But DaCosta said, you know, it's based on BPA and team need. And sometimes you can take first round picks at a position and it's still a team need. So basically, to me, they're not counting how many first rounders did we take a certain position or early round picks in previous years. BPA and team need will determine the pick independent of what they've, you know, the sunk costs they already put into the position.
And he did make the point that it was another very deep class for wide receivers. And I completely agree with that. There's a lot of good wide receiver talent. The 10th best wide receiver on my board will probably be available at 62. And there might be deeper than that even cut by that point. But there was some competition for those topics with tackle and quarterback.
Where I see the depth of the receiver really materializing is at the end of the third, where you still have X and Zs. In previous years, you probably had depth all the way down there, but they were more slot types. And this year there's more, you know, bigger bodies, which really shows
who's
the depth.
The X you like as late as round 3? Because it's still, I think it's a fairly thin.
Probably Tez Walker.
Okay,
that's I think towards Tez Walker. Yeah, because I think he'll be there in the third. And the other years, he'd probably be picked in the top of the third. This year, probably late third.
Okay. All right, very good. Your turn or my turn?
Your turn.
Okay. I thought one of the interesting things he's asked about inside linebacker by Cordell, I believe. And he said that Trenton Simpson is going to have a great season and as talented as anyone, this inside linebacker in the draft class, which I basically agree with because he's a year developed. Mm-hmm. He's done some things at the NFL level And the inside linebacker class, there are really about three good players at the top, and probably none of them are the kind of guys who'd be drafted in the top 15 like Jack Campbell was and like the two Devons were a few years ago when inside linebacker valuations were at an all-time high. But he said that the draft had some talent around 2 to 4, no top 10 linebackers, important to be a good special teams player. So the key thing there is the Ravens are really shorthanded there. They need a fifth body coming into camp. Now, the Ravens could do that by scouring the UDFA ranks and finding two guys they like, using up two spots on the 90, going from 6 probably down to 4 again when the season starts, and maybe even really preparing to be a dime team. One of the things that came up on the inside linebacker show is that I think the Ravens really have a need for a very solid two-down backup, a two-down thumper as a backup who could move into the mic in the case Roquan is hurt, or possibly even move into the will role also for Simpson if he proves not to hold up to the run at a level that we can accept it. So we don't know who Trenton Simpson is yet. That's my opinion on the matter. And you know, we have to see. And I think that's the area. And it doesn't mean you totally give up on pass defense.
Ross
is a guy who's been around. I don't know that we know. And if I had to say on the two, his preseason film, it's been more about his pass defense than his run defense. So I don't think he's the Mike replacement. I know it's not Board, and I don't think Simpson is it either. And I'd really be concerned about who plays Mike. And honestly, they'd probably go to the street again. And I'm sure they still have on speed dial Josh Bynum's number, but they need to probably find somebody a little younger at this point.
Yeah. Well, with 9 picks, I think you sort of get to the day 3, and there's usually a special teams 2-down Mike that's kind of one of your top players. You know, when you're looking at the depth chart and where you need players, according to some projections, you can't even fit all 9 onto the 53 at this point. So I don't necessarily see it that way, and injuries will occur and attrition will happen.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, I could definitely see using a pick on a linebacker late to fill that precise role. Definitely. Another bullet point topic is John Harbaugh. I think for the second or maybe even the third time this offseason made mention of Lamar scouting receivers, and they're waiting on his insight, and he watches tape on receivers in particular. And I just thought that was interesting. I know they tasked Joe Flacco with that years ago, and he identified Tandon Doss, which didn't work out so well. I guess the players that Lamar has recommended so far have been better, but certainly taken with earlier round capital. So anyway, just thought that was interesting. They didn't say they're giving Lamar offensive line tape to evaluate to see what he wants blocking for him. He's more interested in who's catching from him. So yeah.
And I think that it probably is the appropriate way to do it. I wouldn't mind if Lamar had some input into running backs. I'd like to know what he thinks about people who've, you know, been through an offense that makes extensive use of the mesh concept or RPOs. I would love to hear that. The other thing about Lamar is all of this has apparently been conducted by text. So they must have talked also, but you know, assignments have been given out by text and what it kind of sounds like they're asking Lamar to do some things, but not really counting on him coming through. They did say he will do it. That's why it's the liar's lunch. And they want to project the notion that Lamar has a lot of input into this draft. Lamar probably feels like it's going to be somebody else's decision in the end. I can say, I like this guy, like this guy, like this guy, but I don't really have that much input into it. I would guess the truth is closer to that than Lamar's really going through tape 4 hours a day trying to, you know, make good suggestions.
Yeah, it seems that Mar's sort of using this portion of the offseason to decompress. I think there was rumors that he hadn't reached out to Derrick Henry a few weeks after he signed to welcome him. I'm not sure. Apparently last year, though, he was pretty adamant on wanting Beckham. I think he said either Beckham or Hopkins, and he sort of put his foot down, and they kind of had to listen to him because he wasn't signed. It's maybe an interesting dynamic to follow, but Lamar always likes those South Florida guys. He seems to really like them, and sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, I guess.
All right, let's move on. John Harbaugh had, I thought, one response that was really illuminating a little bit to me, and that is, He was asked about the kickoff rule and the hip drop tackle rule, the two major rule changes that they're going this year. If we're talking about the kickoffs first, he said he loves the kickoffs are back in the game, that it's much better than being all in on the fair catch, as he said last year, which I thought was great. You know, basically, yes. He didn't like the fair catch. But he misses the line of scrimmage on kickoffs. Now, if folks recall, like, the kick is going to occur from either the 35 or the 40, but I think maybe the 35, but the players are going to line up, the coverage players are going to line up at the opposing 40, and they can't go until the ball is caught or touched, I think, is the rule. Mm-hmm. And then there's this landing zone. There's all these complicated things that go with that. But he said he liked that. And, you know, I think probably any rule is something the Ravens can game the system and figure out as well or better than other teams. What do you feel about that?
I definitely agree. Very good point. It's interesting. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the new alignment changes what players are on the field. Are you maybe using more offensive linemen as blockers because you don't need quite a running start? Do you maybe use a little bit bigger guys on the coverage team because it's not so much run and hit? It's a little bit more. It might be a little bit more just tighter. So we'll see how that materializes.
It'll be fun. The second part.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
It's the hip drop tackle. And he made a really good point. And I guess I did not know this, but he said the hip drop tackle, and I did know it originated in rugby, but it was discovered in rugby just a few years ago. And it requires a three-part move, basically pulling the runner towards you, falling on the back of his leg. He said, if you're that close, wrap up a tackle like Ray Lewis did. You know, it was an obviously open-handed slap at the filth of the Wilson play. And the ball carrier has no method of escape and 25 times the chance of injury. So I thought very well put by Harbaugh in terms of that. But I didn't realize that the hip drop tackle had been kind of like developed for rugby in the way it had, that people didn't know how to do this thing that involved grabbing, twisting, and falling on the back of the legs. And they, you know, rugby determined there's a much higher injury rate at it. And apparently the NFL picked up on that. Their players, started doing it. So absolutely filthy play. And I hope at some point that he particularly will have to pay for that, but not in the form of an injury, maybe in the form of a suspension instead, but it probably won't happen.
25 times more likely. It's kind of all you need to say, I think.
Yep. I think that about does it for me. You had other things?
No, not really. I guess two more quick ones. You know, Harbs, I thought, was very coach speaky. You know, he loves all the young players. They're all developing ahead of process, you know, exuding confidence as always, which is what he does. And that's what all coaches do. You know, I think they were a little bit defensive as far as there's a lot of time to make moves and look at our roster now and look at what our roster was at this time last year and how it turned out by September, October. And that's very valid. But I do want to push back a little bit. There's not always Jadeveon Clowney, Ronald Darby sitting there in August cheap. Sometimes you get a Clowney, sometimes you get a Villanueva. It doesn't always work out. So I'm still a little bit concerned about how the roster is going to take shape, but I understand why they want to exude confidence in the situation.
Regarding that, there was one other interesting question that said, how's, you know, the pressure of this time last year versus this year in terms of the draft? And said basically, you know, we're all sipping pina coladas at the pool, basically taking a jab back and saying, no, it's not easy. But the last year at this time, they didn't have Lamar signed. And they had to, you know, go out and overspend on Beckham, probably at the behest of Lamar. And that obviously cost him 24 cap space to deal with. And then they've further, though, this year said, you know, it's been a different challenge, but losing all the UFAs is something that's been kind of stressful thing that they've had to deal with. So I thought, you know, it was a good balanced response. It's not an easy take it off year. Certainly this is an important draft, But it also, it didn't have your quarterback contract being the central focus of last offseason, which was, that was quite a stress, a stressful time.
Sure was. One of the most difficult offseasons I can recall in team history, honestly. Yep. Turned out well, though. Turned out for a good season. Yep.
There you go. He did talk about the great depth of the team last year and try to rebuild that depth. Was, I guess, one more thing. Do you have one more point? I think
nope, that's it. That wraps it up for me.
Let's move on a little bit, talk about the re-signing of Kyle Van Noy. It's been now a few days, and we've had a chance kind of to reflect on this. I know I have. To me, the price looks really good. It's about half the price of the Clowney deal in terms of the player you're getting. Clowney, a very special and outstanding player, but I thought Van Noy came in and generated a lot of first pressures himself as well.
Yeah, I like Kyle Van Noy. Good player, versatile player with the Sam ability. Seemed to be just sort of a clutch player when you needed a pressure or a play on third down. He was there to make it. Very reasonable terms, 2 years, $9 million, $5.3 million guaranteed. Potential for $3.8 million savings if he only plays the 1 year, not the two. To me, the biggest thing is it eliminates one of those big needs. I think you could have made a case before that outside linebacker was actually the number one most pressing, even more than right tackle, considering the amount of playing time Ojabo has versus Falele and the potential trajectory. Now you don't have that anymore. I think he really solidifies the room. You have a two deep, maybe even a three deep, if you want to count some of the developmental players like a Malik Ham as a potential player. I think you don't need to draft an outside linebacker early. And DeCosta can really focus his concentrated efforts on offensive tackle, wide receiver, cornerback, and probably safety, I would say, is a bigger need than outside linebacker at the moment.
Safety didn't come at all up at all during the last luncheon, which was kind of interesting. In terms of Kyle Van Noy, the Sam linebacker component to his game, he's got almost 2,000 career coverage snaps, is really important, and people can't forget. Even last year, where they didn't drop to cover too much, they weren't using a lot of zone blitzes. They weren't using a lot of five-man rushes, period, but they weren't really using a whole lot of zone blitzes. They only rushed him, I think, 10.3% coverage snaps last season. So it's interesting. I think, you know, obviously one of the big things for this draft is whether they get anything out of pick 45 from 2 years ago. That obviously was a very significant gamble at the time. So far, it has not paid off. And I think, you know, it's only fair to say that the floor and the ceiling have both dropped. And there's an additional thing about it, and it's kind of a situation the Orioles have right now in really not having the roster spots for their good players because they've got some mediocre players at the major league level who, you know, are veterans who have been here for a long time, like Hayes, Mullins, and Santander all fall into that category in the outfield for me. But the problem at outside linebackers, they've got a lot of guys with very specialized roles. Mm-hmm. So Harrison and Tavius Robinson have taken on this very specific base defense, run defense role. They're typically not on the field for passing downs. You got those three guys in Owe, Ojabo, and Van Noy that try to get something out of them passing downs. And then you got hopefully a developmental guy in Ham. There's only really room for one draft pick, and that one draft pick is probably, if they're any good, is going to push somebody else off the team. So it's an interesting situation, and obviously inert players who are in the middle in terms of, you know, being guys who you're not sure about, even first contract guys often, who, you know, just haven't really shown it yet. Tavius Robinson's in a good spot, but we don't know who he is yet. And Ojabo is not in a good spot, and yet I think the team feels compelled to continue on with that experiment.
Yeah, when you use early round capital, you want to give those players every chance to succeed. In the same vein, in some ways, as Bateman, you know, but they're really going to be relying on these younger guys that have had some missteps. Back to Van Noy, leadership, I think, is tremendous. And sometimes I think that's a little bit overrated or just kind of overtaken or just what I'm trying to say is Van Noy is a player who not only has a Super Bowl experience, but if you listen to the podcast he did on the Lounge, he is not afraid to say we need more from Lamar. We need a better season from Marlon Humphrey. And really, while at the same time praising the younger players, asking for more and more, almost how Ray Lewis did. I thought that was really – Ray Lewis challenged everyone to be at their very best all the time. And seems like Van Noy has that. Is Price is Right. The Price is certainly right. 28% discount off of his $6.3 million valuation from last year at 4.5 APY. Price still would have been right on Clowney. Clowney was at a $15 million valuation, signed for $10 million APY. But either way, both of those players at a 30% discount off of their valuation from OTC is good value.
So, and the in terms of the contract, as you've explained to me, is $9.5 million for 2 years, but it's $5.7 million for 1 year, so with an option of, for the second year, $3.8 million effectively. So the Ravens have it's a good situation. I'm always a little bit skeptical of such contracts given to older players, and Van Noy's 34, that it really becomes a 1 year deal in the guise of a 2 year deal, that he doesn't really have an interest in playing 2 years. He wants to get $5.7 million for 1 year and be done with it, and possibly retire at that point. I haven't really seen that directly from Van Noy yet, but also an older player, higher probability of injury, higher probability of drop off of production, and you run the risk that that 2 year contract becomes a one. But I think the terms protect the Ravens pretty well in this case. So I would look at it effectively as a 1 year, $5.7 million deal.
Sure. Yeah. Very good. So, you know, I think you probably project somewhat of a fall off in play from Van Noy, which is probably compensated by 08 taking the next step. You see what you have in Tavius. I'm skeptical that his pass rush is going to develop based off of his metrics from last year, but Ojabo is really the wild card, and you could get a great season out of Ojabo, or maybe not. I'd probably say to project a little bit of decrease in productivity from the outside linebackers, but because of Clowney had such a tremendous year, I think you can make a case he had one of the best years for a one-year deal mercenary of any Raven in recent history. But the defensive line, I think, not only do they retain everybody, but they still have ascending players. They could probably make up the difference, and you still should have a pretty good pass rush, even if you don't add anything else between now and week one.
That defensive line, in my opinion, does need to get younger, and that is that's going to be a challenge also in terms of total roster spots. But we'll come back to that again another time. Let's talk about the other signing this week, which was Deonte Hardy. If you don't know who he is, a 5'6 return man, went to school locally here at Archbishop Curley. His Wikipedia really goes into detail about the exploits at Curley, and in particular what he did against Loyola in some games there. But it's a good read. Impressively, AP1 as an undrafted rookie with the 2019 Saints as a punt returner. Played 4 years there, won with the Bills, got very good return stats career, 10.4 yards per return on punts, 25.2 on kickoffs. I am sure he moves into returner one status over Wallace, who had the great return against the Rams last year to win the game. I don't think there's any question about who the Ravens' number one returner is on both units.
Yes, I agree. I think it should be Hardy. 12.4 on punts last year for Buffalo. One downside, 11 career fumbles. That's a big number for him.
Wow.
11 career fumbles. But yeah, as you mentioned, all-pro return man. He had 21 targets on offense for Buffalo last year. A little interesting that Buffalo, who needs receivers really bad now without Diggs, didn't really want him on a veteran minimum deal, but maybe there's some overlap skill set with, I think they picked up Curtis Samuel, and Shakir is sort of a slot man too. So maybe they just wanted a different body type. I think it's going to be a renewed emphasis on special teams this year between the kickoff rule and Harbaugh's influence. And I think day three of the draft, you could probably see some special teams only type of players drafted. I do think Hardy will also help on offense potentially in a gadget role. And he had a pretty good year, put up about 500 yards for the Saints 3 years ago, I believe.
Yeah, it's surprising that he has pretty good receiving statistics in his career, many more chances than you would think. He's also run the ball for 6.5 yards per carry on 19 career carries. So he's definitely a jet motion gadget type guy. I'm very happy to have him for that reason. I think you put him on the field, you draw attention. But more importantly, potentially more importantly, you allow Zay to run routes that can really hurt the opponents down the field. And I think Deontay Hardy is a nice pickup. Kind of reminds me, although this guy was particularly a return man in the 1970s, of Howard Stevens of the Colts. And he was a guy who was 5'5", and return man only. Also started with the Saints, by the way, and then came to Baltimore. Played about 5 NFL seasons, but in those mid-70s Colts years, he was the guy. He was the return man the Colts depended on, and kind of an interesting player. I still remember going to the 58-20 win over Buffalo, and we were just kind of leaving the stadium a little early in 1976, and they announced as the ball was way down at the other end of the field. We were in some crappy temporary seats that are right down by the field of the other opposite end zone. So the touchdown's on the closed end. And they announced that Howard Stevens had just scored a touchdown as a running back. And I was like, wow, they've got everybody in the game now at this point. So it's kind of cool. But yeah, I don't know if you remember him as a player.
That was before my time, a little bit before my time. But yeah, I think it's a good signing. The one thing I thought was a little bit interesting, $1.15 million guaranteed. So that's now the third guaranteed, and right in that range, Josh Johnson, Chris Board, and Deontay Hardy are guaranteed for 1.2. That takes them out of the handshake crew option. If you compare the way Brent Urban's contract is structured, there's only $25,000 guaranteed, just a signing bonus. So he is pretty much already on the handshake trajectory. So these other guys, if they are somehow injured or they don't make the team or they are a handshake deal for some reason, they need that spot, that will count as dead money against the cap. So a little bit curious why they would make that commitment at this point of the calendar to me.
Yeah, it definitely is a commitment. And it probably was, I mean, sure, it was a significant part of the negotiations is, are you guaranteeing it or are you just bringing me to camp and deciding on me yet? And, you know, that's the central question for a player like Deontay Hardy, who's this is might be the last contract he ever signs, but it certainly is a very significant pivotal crossroads year for him. If he has a good year returning, maybe he gets another contract. If he doesn't, you know, I would want guaranteed money in this contract if I were him. So I understand it. In Chris Board's case, I don't know why the Ravens gave it. I really don't. Was it that much demand for Chris Board or another linebacker like Chris Board? Let's put it that way, that they couldn't find a way to do it cheaper. But in Hardy's case, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. And we've seen guys carve out roles, long careers as return man specialists. And, you know, if I had to guess, I'd say this new kickoff rule is going to make that job much more valuable going forward.
Yeah, completely agree. Let's talk one more free agent lost, Sam Mustipher to the Broncos. A disappointing one to me, a guy who, you know, had vet minimum written all over him, probably also a handshake crew guy. I don't know what the Broncos gave him in terms of guaranteed money. I haven't seen a contract terms yet.
Batman. The same 1.15.
Is it guaranteed? Any component?
You know what? I didn't check if it was guaranteed. I should have.
All right. So that might really have been the sticking point. I mean, obviously he's going to make something very close to the vet minimum. I thought he was a valuable player to be the backup center. You don't want to be in a position where McCary has to step in for anything but a finish the game situation if you also want him to be the left tackle backup. And that is, I think, what the Ravens want. I don't even think the Ravens want to be the right tackle backup. I think they want to be the left tackle backup.
Yes, I agree. I would have liked to keep Mustipher for a reasonable price. You know, the difference between these veteran minimum guys and the very – the lowest cost replacement cost is about $400,000. So, you know, I thought he played well enough to take that on. I think he would have been a solid backup. He was a solid backup. I think the reason why he went to Denver probably because he has an opportunity to compete for a starting job. Looking at their depth chart right now, they have a 22 fifth round pick by the name of Wadenberg as their penciled in as their starting center. So wouldn't be surprised if Mustipher wins that job if they don't add to that group in the draft.
I think he's been – Denver has been one of the teams that JPJ has been mocked to, who is a top center. He's probably he's the top interior offensive lineman, as I would see it. And he is one of the few centers that I think really could move to guard and really has the right size and shape to do it. And if if you include him, you got one center who can move to guard. You got a bunch of tackles, as you alluded to it earlier, who probably will move to guard. I left him at tackle in my ratings. Then the guard group becomes a little more juicy in terms of what you have. But there's a whole bunch of guys, including like a tackle that is going to move to center in Barton, I believe. I don't believe he'll be at guard. And a bunch of other guys who are centers only, including Frazier of West Virginia, who's good, but I wouldn't want him at any other position. I don't see the depth at guard this year. And I think, you know, when we saw all the money was thrown at guards, it makes all kinds of sense that other teams don't see it either. I just hope this is a year maybe where DaCosta has a couple of small school rabbits to pull out of his hat.
Definitely. I think you could probably, it's probably going to carry 10 offensive linemen into week one, Ken. Would that be your estimation?
I would say 9 is more typical. So they might have a guy who's on the practice squad if they've got a handshake type guy like Mustafer that they can keep around like that. But it'd be a 9 to make 8 on the roster. Last year they carried Sala. Be interesting, you know, we're going to go through this during the offseason, so we don't need to do it right now. But interesting to see to me if Sala even has a spot on this roster.
That's the point I was trying to make. I think it's a pivotal offseason for Sala. He's got to get up in that 2 deep or no reason to really keep him much longer.
Yeah, very good. I guess comp pick status, the remaining free agents are still the same guys, Cook, Dobbins, Worley, and Yassin. Worley is my guy. He's the guy I think the Ravens need to get back. And I don't understand that the hesitation in signing him, other than the Ravens probably really have interest at safety in this draft and are trying to decide. But I still think unless they know something about Worley's health that they really don't like or about the nature of his injury, I would not see a reason why they would not bring him back because he was quite good last year.
Completely agree. We've mentioned Darryl Worley several times, potentially lingering injury. Potentially they're waiting to see if Justin Simmons can, his price drops so low that they want to make a move on a higher caliber. But to me, they need three safeties between now and training camp. I don't think Ardarius Washington's a safety. I think he's a corner. I don't think you want him on the back end with Jamar Chase running downhill at him, not being able to make that tackle. So I consider him a corner. And you have two safeties, and you want one of your safeties playing big nickel a good portion of the time. So you need three, maybe two, draft two, or yep.
Yeah, I mean, they've only got two on the roster currently. And right. so if you think Worley is number three, I think they want to go to camp with 6 to make 5 on opening day. And I would even make the argument that there are going to be times where you want 4 on the field at once if you ever have to dimize the Simpson third down role, if he doesn't come through for you there. So, you know, just a lot of things can happen. Another way that it's not even Simpson's fault, what if Roquan gets hurt? You got to have an extra safety who can play dime at that point. Move Simpson over to the mic roll on third down, and bring in somebody else who's a decent zone coverage underneath player, which usually means a safety and not a linebacker.
Yeah, safety's a big need. I think pretty much everybody's kind of locked in. They want an offensive tackle, a wide receiver, and a corner with the first three picks. Mm-hmm. Certain people want a different order than others, but I think majority of the fan base seems to be kind of hurting that way. If there's one BPA position that could sneak up in there that I would support, it would be safety. Now that goes against the efficiency they have in finding mid to late round safeties that play well. But if there's somebody that's too good to pass up on, that's a safety there, it's essentially going to be a starter if Hamilton's playing big nickel. So I'd support that fully.
Yeah, the player would get as much time as Geno Stone did last year, presumably in the lineup, and possibly more because Hamilton was forced into not playing that nickel role at times when I think they would have liked to do it. I think it's a great point, and I would support it too. I really don't want to see it be a 1 or a 2, but if it is a second round pick, say it's going to be a great player. Mm-hmm. It's going to be one of the really top safeties out there, and you know it would. Whenever you see a pick that's like, why on earth did they draft that position, you know, kind of thing, it's probably a great pick because if you're running against need to pick a player you think is too damn good to pass up.
Yeah. To your Trenton Simpson point from earlier, I think he finished the cycle ranked in Jeremiah's top 50 prospects. And I only think he has 2 linebackers in his top 50 now. So you're comparing year to year. Yeah. Simpson, hopefully, is going to pay off in spades.
Comp pick status, the Ravens are now plus +7. Not really in any danger of losing from four compensatory picks this year. I don't think they have a number of signings themselves that they're going to go through that will cost them selections here. But they are currently projected with a 4, a 5, a 6, and a 6. They have some offsets in there. Derrick Henry signing in particular cost them a 6th-round pick. But that's okay because they've got others. And, and they really have about the most draft capital of any team other than the Miami Dolphins, who have 2 threes coming up.
Yeah. It was Van Ginkel was the second one. I know Hunt was the one. Was it Van Ginkel?
That may be correct. So Hunt and
Hunt. Anyway,
Christian Wilkins, they re-signed, right? It's not him.
No, it's Wilkins. That's who it is. Yep, it's Wilkins. Yeah, he was probably the marquee free agent on the entire that moved teams.
Yeah,
via free agency this year.
It's really unusual to have not heard of who the third round compensatory guys, because there's only four of them, and they're all $20 to $25 million a year guys. So yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Josh, Foss, always a pleasure to do this show with you. Tell folks where they can find your work online.
I am at Vasilis Beatdown on Twitter, X, V-A-S-I-L-I-S Beatdown, co-managing editor and author for Baltimore Beatdown blog, gearing up for our draft coverage, our favorite weekend of the year at Beatdown.
Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open. Looking for people to do the Recollection series. I'm sure you know what that is by now if you're listening this late. Just DM me your player, and I'll reserve it for you. We'll get back on terms of scheduling in the near future. If you would like to be involved in the draft show, I'm going to have a couple of rotating panelist positions that I would love to have some very loyal listeners of the show in on. Please contact me and I will bring you in for that. If you'd like to just ask a question and be part of this very relaxed watch party that we have, that we've enjoyed for many years now, love to have you on that. And we'll be taking as many questions and probably bringing people in for questions as much as we can. We could be very interactive, just a bunch of guys watching the draft together. That's what we are. So we'd love to have you. And the fun of it is not tipping picks and just organically watching that draft together. But anyway, looking forward to that. For Vasilis, this is Ken McKusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on Friday Morning GM.